Likewise, when Alexander I, Paul's oldest son, who ruled from 1801 to 1825, came to the throne, this was met with widespread jubilation and high hopes, especially, again, we're talking about elite society. And these hopes were encouraged in many ways by Alexander I himself. On coming to the throne, Alexander made it clear that, unlike his father, he would rule in the spirit of his grandmother, Catherine II. He also implicitly, in the closed circles of the elite, made it clear that he approved of the coup against his father. He did make it clear that he did not know that they were going to murder him. One can question whether that was true or not. But nonetheless, his acceptance of this act indicated his own acceptance of the idea that tyranny was now illegitimate, an illegitimate form of power. Practically, he did undid much of his father's what might be best called as counter-reforms, except, interestingly enough, the rule of succession along the male line, which seemed to him to be fair and rational and following Western models. And he set out on a course of trying to further Catherine's reforms. Now, let me caution you here. In many ways, Alexander I is one of the most complex and intriguing and difficult to understand monarchs in modern Russia. He was a challenge for his contemporaries to figure out. He was a challenge for his friends to understand, and he remains a challenge for historians. He's been called variously a sphinx due to all of this complexity, an enigma, and even by some, a crowned Hamlet. What I'd like to suggest, and I'll elaborate on this, is that Alexander's seeming contradictoriness, his strangeness, had much to do with the contradictoriness that we've already discussed about the Russian political tradition. The dual tradition of the Tsar being both Grozny and Tishaishi, both awesome and fierce and guarding the absolute power of the throne on the one hand, and also tender and saintly and loving and caring for the people's happiness on the other. First, an overview of his major acts. He began his reign very promisingly by establishing what he called an unofficial committee. And the job of this committee, which was made up of people he knew well, closely respected, generally people seen as having enlightened views about politics and society, he brought these people together to discuss really thinking about major political and social reforms, including nothing less than creating a constitution for Russia, something that in some ways would limit the absolute personal power of the autocrat, at least in law, and very importantly in social affairs, an end to serfdom. And in fact, throughout his reign, he continued to talk about the possibility of creating a constitution for Russia. He also reformed the central state administration by giving the Senate, and the Senate was this body created by Peter I, which was mainly made up of the heads of the colleges, of the ministries, as well as other high expert advisors who served the Tsar as advisor, Alexander made the Senate even more powerful an institution for coordinating policy, and also it would serve as the first Supreme Court for the country. He also actually changed the name of the colleges into ministries and reorganized their structure. The collegiate leadership of the colleges, which was collaborative among a small committee, was seen as inefficient, as not sufficiently in tune with what existed in Western Europe at that point, and created ministries, each of which had one single minister in charge. He also created a new central institution, which was called the State Council. This was modeled explicitly on Napoleon's Conseil d'État, his own council of state, and this was made up of respected advisors, experts in various fields, who could advise him on reform, even after the unofficial committee ceased to exist. He also enacted some legislation to try to, at least while thinking about what to do with serfdom, would at least improve the conditions of serfs. Most importantly, he forbid for the first time the selling of individual serfs apart from their families. He also, as his predecessors had done, especially Catherine and Peter, tried to encourage the economy. And one way he did it was to allow non-nobles to own estates, that anybody who seemed to have the money and the desire to build up agriculture, and often factories in those lands, could now own land, own estates.